I april 2016 skakas poliserna i norr av ett groteskt mordförsök när en kvinna förgiftar sin man. Motivet, att se honom dö.
Här pratar vi ju då om förgiftningar av olika slag och det är ovanligt.
Lyssna på hela avsnittet Giftgåtan i Piteå i podden Fallen jag aldrig glömmer i Podplay-appen.
Jakten på mördaren är tillbaka med säsong 18. 10 nya mordfall som skakade världen och polisens jakt på mördaren. Först ut denna säsong kommer du få höra 4 av Sveriges mest gripande och mest omskrivna fall.
Snart därefter upptäcker de Lisa Holms jacka och mopedhjälm i en rishög på gården.
Vill du höra alla avsnitt av säsongen direkt kan du göra det helt gratis i appen Podplay.
Lördagsgästen på Retro FM.
Ja, det är lördag morgon och den här veckan är jag nyfiken på en Hollywood-kändis som råkar vara förbi i stan. Och vi har sett honom i Terminator 2, vi har sett honom på tv och han är Robert Patrick. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. How are you?
Great.
Good morning, Sweden. Hello, everybody. I'm thrilled to be here.
First time in Malmö, classic question.
I think it is the first time in Malmö. I have been to Sweden here before with the sci-fi world that I'm here doing today. But I was in Stockholm, so it's really interesting to me to see Malmö. I find it to be a really, really beautiful city. From what I've seen so far.
Jet lag flying in from sunny California the other day?
Probably a little bit of jet lag. But you've perked me up this morning with some good Swedish coffee.
Yeah.
And stories of Arkansas.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Wonderful stories of chiggers and Arkansas and football.
Yeah.
Wow. You as a linebacker and the disappointment on your coaches' faces when they realize you can't kick.
Yeah.
They thought you were the big savior coming in from Sweden. You're going to be able to kick.
Yeah,
I know. You couldn't kick and they threw you in there as a linebacker. That's fascinating.
Yeah. And a Georgia boy ending up in Cleveland, Marietta, Georgia.
Yeah, well, you know, I was born in Marietta, Georgia in 1958. My father was worked in the aerospace industry and we moved around a lot, which was, I think, a phenomena that started maybe in the 50s and 60s in America. I don't know if it was over here as well, where you grew up in your hometown, but you left your hometown and you went out and you pursued your career. So my father was from the East Coast and found himself down in Marietta, Georgia, working for Lockheed Aircraft after he went to college. And then he got into the banking industry, and we moved around. We followed my father wherever his career went.
What's your fondest memory from Georgia? Were you just a little?
Raised in the 60s, right outside Atlanta.
Yeah.
So I saw a lot of changes in the civil rights movement and things that had a pretty profound effect on the country from the Deep South.
Yeah.
So,
catfish country.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, you were down there in Arkansas, so you know. I have a lot of family that lived in Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas. We have a contingency of family down there. You know, my family's been in America since the 1600s. I'm Scots Irish ancestry, and I had family fight on the. In the Revolutionary War and both sides of the Civil War, so some Confederates and some Union soldiers, some Yankees, we had it all. But
interesting family meets with the Patrick family when they start discussing back in the days.
Oh yeah, interesting for sure. My father is. A New Englander, and my mother is a Southerner, so I've got that kind of cross.
How did you end up being an actor? Because I know you weren't pursuing an acting career from the beginning, Robert.
Yeah, I'm. You know, I grew up going to the movies a lot. My father was a trumpet player. He really loved music. There was a time when he was going to be a musician. And he had a real appreciation for the arts, music and motion picture. And he took me to see films. And, you know, I was your basic kid growing up. I liked sports and all things like that, and never really looked at acting as a profession, but had been thrown into some productions over the years when I was in school and had a little experience acting. But it wasn't until, you know, high school and getting out of high school and college, my first year, where I decided that I wanted to make that my life's work, become an artist and be a part of the motion picture industry and pursue a career in acting.
What did your parents say when you, I mean, because...
Well, it's not a very confident, inspiring profession to choose. There's so many what ifs, and it's a one in a million shot, you know, if things are going to work out the way they're going to work out. So parents are obviously trepidatious about you as a child pursuing that as a career, you know, like many artists. I mean, I'm looking at this beautiful mural you have in your radio booth here, and I'm looking at all these artists, and every one of them had to assume that risk of, you know, hanging their art out there to see what was going to happen, and that's the risks that artists take. I'm going to assume it and pursue this career, and hopefully people are going to buy my art. And it's interesting to me because that's the real gamble, I think.
Did your parents try to persuade you at any time?
Yeah, they thought it was crazy, man. Yeah. Don't leave college. Yeah. You know, what do you mean you're quitting college? You're going to pursue a career in acting? What makes you think you can make it? You know, it's that kind of thing. It's like, you know, what if you don't make it? I mean, what are you going to do? How are you going to support yourself? You need a job. You need a career. You need security. That's, you know, and that's what parents want for their kids. I think it's tough for parents to have children that have artistic desires because people want, they want to know you're going to be taken care of. And that's such an unsure industry and vocation to choose, you know, I'm going to be an actor.
Your own daughter, 22 years old, she's almost graduating college. You told me she's going into to the acting industry.
Oh, yeah. Well, she went off to college, and she's graduating in June. And you asked me about what her degree is in, and it's liberal arts. And she'll be pursuing a career in the performing arts as well. She'll be an actress. She's already done some stuff with some friends of mine, and she's fantastic, and you know, I think it is in her blood, so she should do it.
For a young aspiring actor, what would your, you know, old man's advice be for anybody who's trying to head into this industry?
Well, we've already touched on some of the stuff. You know, you have to stay true to yourself and really have an idea who you are and focus on what you're trying to accomplish, and then, you know, basically be prepared, be early, be on time. Being on time is one thing, but being early shows that you really earnestly want to get out there and work.
Yeah.
And that makes a great impression. But hang up your wardrobe when you're done. Just try to be somebody people want to work with, not around, you know? And that's my advice. You can't compare yourself to other people. You have to be yourself and, you know, just mind your own business and do your thing, you know?
I'm turning 54 and you're 60, and I'm so crazy envious. I'm looking at you. I've seen your workout snaps from Instagram.
You know my workout secret, though, right?
Yeah.
My workout secret is Swede Fit.
Swede Fit.
Sandra Jersby. Uh-huh. She is my workout guru, and she's from Sweden, and she comes over to my house every morning, three times a week, sometimes five times a week if we're working out really hard, and you know, that puts me through the workout. She's trying to keep me able to, I think at my age, I'm turning 60, I just want to be able to continue to move and not get stiff and flex and get in different areas and stretch out. And it's not so much just putting on muscle anymore. It's more about taking care of yourself that you can move and stay agile and keep your balance. And
body maintenance, huh? Yeah.
A lot of maintenance, mm-hmm. buddy. Yeah.
I seen you with the kettlebells. Is that a great workout?
Yeah, the kettlebells are new to me, too. You know, there's so many things you can do with the kettlebells, and I have to learn. I need Sandra just to get me through the workout so I can, because I can't come up with half of this stuff on my own, so you need a trained technician. But, Yeah, they're good. Kettlebells, I recommend them.
Still in living in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I live in the Hollywood Hills, which was another dream of mine when I was getting in the business. I wanted a house in the Hollywood Hills, like Bob Seger talked about in Hollywood Nights. And I made it. I'm up there. Been up there since 94. Love it. Just bought a Harley-Davidson dealership in Santa Clarita, California, which is just 30 minutes north. So I spend some time up in Santa Clarita and the rest of the time in the Hollywood Hills.
It's great because while we're doing the interview, you've been looking at your phone, checking out your employees in your in your dealership.
It's a little creepy. Yeah, I'm with all this advanced technology we have now, I can watch my employees from Sweden back in Santa Clarita. Keep an eye on. Hey, what's going on over there? So I saw that person take something into the fitting room. You know, interesting.
For most of our younger generation, you're probably mostly known for some of the TV shows you've been making, Colonel Tom Ryan and The Unit.
Colonel Tom Ryan, The Unit, yep.
How did you end up that show?
Loved that show. Well, I was very lucky, auditioned for David Mamet and Sean Ryan, read for them, and Davis Guggenheim shot that pilot. I come from a military family. I think there's something about the way I carry myself that lends people to think that possibly I could be in the military.
I mean, looking at you right now, I mean, you could be a colonel in the Army.
That's what they said. Yeah. They said that. So, yeah, I've had a great experience as an actor portraying
Army types,
Army types, Marine. I was a Marine. I think I've been every branch of the armed forces. So it's been... it's been good for me. My grandfather was in the Army. He was a United States colonel, lieutenant colonel, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam. So maybe I get some of that demeanor from him.
Was that an option for you any time in your life that, you know, like a lot of young people heading out of high school, going into the Army and serve your country?
You know, we talked about this earlier before I got out there. It's something that I sort of feel like I got gypped on. In the sense that when I was in high school, it was, you know, Vietnam was going on the whole time I was going up through the 60s. So we were able to see the Vietnam War for the first time on black and white TV when I was a kid, and it was terrifying. And the nation as a whole rejected the Vietnam War, and we grossly mistreated our armed forces when they came back. Yeah. And these poor men and women were drafted. Yeah. They had no say, and they were forced to go off and fight this war in Vietnam.
And being called baby killers when they're coming home.
Yeah, and you know the it's just horrible the way that the country sort of turned on the very men and women that provide them their freedom, and it didn't make the military look like an option for me. It the patina that was on them as a result of the media's treatment of them. You know, I was influenced by that. So I never looked at the military as an option, even though I came from a military family. Yeah. That's sad. It's really sad. However, you know, if I had, I don't know if my life would have turned out the way it has now, that I'd be sitting here having a interview with you in Malmo, Sweden. So...
crazy the way things turns out in life, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. When we were talking about this earlier that... sitting back and thinking about some of the decisions you made and some of the disappointments you've had. And I think, you know, you touched on it earlier talking to younger people. Life is hard.
Yeah,
okay?
Sure is.
You're going to do a lot of things. You're going to try, and they're going to fail. And the main thing is you got to get back up and keep going. You just don't quit. You're going to have disappointments. If you're trying to do anything in life, no matter what it is, you're going to get disappointed.
And that disappointment is going to make you stronger.
Exactly. And the more disappointment you have, the stronger you're going to be. And if you're not getting disappointed, you're not trying hard enough. You got to risk things. You got to go for it. So I'm really happy with the way my life has turned out, and I'm incredibly grateful. But there is that part of me that says, what if I had chosen a career in the military? You know, because I do have such an admiration and respect for the men and women of the armed forces. Number one, I want to say that. I do everything I can as a private citizen for the USO. I go all over the world. I see our men and women of the armed forces wherever they are and do what I can to help with morale. with Harley Davidson, the support that the motor company gives to the men and women of the armed forces. We do a lot of things at our dealership to pay our respect to the men and women. One of the great things I'll be doing is riding across the country on my Harley in May. To the Vietnam War Memorial, Memorial Day in Washington, D.C., and we demonstrate for the POW and the MIA from all wars, but particularly the Vietnam War. So I get to be with my Vietnam vet buddies that are just slightly older than me. Because when Vietnam was going on...
You were still in high school.
I was still in high school.
Yeah.
But by the time I graduated, it had just ended. And, you know, as I said earlier, I could have gone that way and I didn't. Those guys that I've gotten to know that fought during Vietnam, you know, they never lost a gun battle. They never lost one battle.
No,
that war was not lost by anybody except for the people at home that were against it,
and some of the politicians.
Yeah, that's not the men and women of the armed forces. Yeah. They did their job. They were let down by their country, so. I get to go and participate in that. I look forward to that every year. And
portraying Tom Ryan, did you get the? It's about the Delta Force, one of the
ELAC
units. Did you get to meet up with some of the people who's been serving in the Delta Force over the years?
Yeah, well, they're a very clandestine, secret organization. You don't know a lot of people that are in the Delta Force, but the one I met was Eric Haney, who wrote the book Inside the Delta Force.
Classic book.
And he was, I don't want to say he was our technical advisor. He was the creator, and he was one of the writers on the show, and he was always there and giving us instruction on the what to do's and what not to do's. Eric's a great guy, fascinating. I think we have a fascination with trained killer elite sort of secret agent guys. You know, and that's the Delta Force to Americans is our James Bond equivalent, I guess. I don't know.
Working with Schwarzenegger, of course.
Great guy. Nice segue.
Yeah.
Superhero, Delta Force.
And then Schwarzenegger.
James Bond, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Same, but different.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great guy. Amount of appreciation and respect for him for everything he's done with his life. Being a goal-getter, setting goals, going out, making things happen for himself, starting in Austria and then coming over and dominating the...
The bodybuilding Mr. Universe and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and the motion picture industry was the top motion picture star, you know, business things that he's done. I mean, he's fantastic. He became the governor of the state of California, for crying out loud. So, I mean, he's an amazing... human being, super amount of charisma, super amount of respect for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Really, really proud that I got to beat him up in T2.
T-1000, how did it end up being Robert Patrick? Because you hadn't done many major roles before that.
I had done a play. I'd done a couple of things for Roger Corman, but that's where James Cameron started. He started with Roger Corman.
Yeah.
So he knew what I had gone through working for Mr. Corman, the producer. I think that kind of made him really take a look at me. I look on the wall here, you got some Billy Idol up here. You know, Billy was one that was originally scheduled to be the T-1000. He got hurt, ironically, riding a Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it created a vacuum that I filled when James Cameron was trying to find somebody. Once it went from it's going to be Billy Idol to now we can maybe go get an unknown, which...
Could you have seen Billy Idol as the T-1000?
I've seen sketches that Stan Winston did at the Stan Winston School where they were sketching Billy Idol's face, you know, as the T-1000, so...
I mean, playing a T-1000, a lot of special effects that we hadn't seen before. We're talking early 90s here, Robert.
Yeah, the first motion picture, motion capture performance. And now motion capture is such a part of the film industry. But at the time, it was the first one ever done. And, they painted 3-inch squares all over my body. I was, naked, standing there like a brief, swimming trunks or whatever and a skull cap. And they painted 3-inch squares all over me, all around me. And then they three-dimensionally put me in the computer for the first time. And they studied my walk and my run. And that's why we had a very specific walk and we had a very specific run, so that we'd always know exactly what we wanted to go back to every time we had to go back to it. So we give it that consistency of the performance. So we had all that going for us. But it was the first time, and so there was a lot of things to learn and have to come up with on the spot from all of us.
Edward Furlong, Linda Hamilton.
Great guy.
And Michael Biehn, who was in a short set in the film.
Well, Michael was going to be... Yeah. Michael's had an interesting career with the Terminator, because originally he was going to be, if I'm not mistaken, the Terminator. He was always going to be Kyle Reese. That's not right. Originally they were talking to O.J. Simpson about being the Terminator, and then they ended up offering it to Arnold, and he was going to play Kyle Reese, but then he said, no, I want to play the Terminator. And then he played the Terminator. I don't know, something like that went down. But then Michael was scheduled to be with the T-1000 briefly. James had thought about that. And then it said, nah, that's going to be too confusing for the audience if I have Michael as the T-1000. I don't want to do that. So then they came up with creating the T-1000 and it being Billy Idol. Yeah. And then when he couldn't do it, they started looking for a fresh face, me. And that's how I got it, somebody that the audience didn't have a preconceived notion of who I was, right? So they would accept me when they saw me in the film. They who's this guy? Oh, my God, look at that guy walking out of fire, So it was made the credibility all that much better.
Do people still stop you in the street, recognize you as the T-1000?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the T-1000 is definitely the most famous role I've ever had to date. It's obviously the role that gave me my entire career, and I'm blessed to have it. And it's still fun for me that people recognize me from that movie. But it's also fun for me to be recognized for other things.
Yeah.
And I do see myself not as just one role, but my entire body of work. And I do like it when people appreciate some of the other things that I've done that I worked real hard at as well.
Right now you're in Malmö, but what's your most recent movie or TV project?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll recap it for you real quick here. So I've been doing, for CBS, I've been doing a series called Scorpion for years. For four consecutive years I did that, and that ended, and now I've been doing nothing but motion pictures.
Okay.
So I've got quite a few that are out there right now, and I've been doing as many different varied things as possible. The guy that I played in Scorpion had such virtue and was such a good guy that I started looking for really, intense, not-so-good guy roles. And I had quite a few. A movie I produced called The Last Rampage. Not The Last Rampage, excuse me. It's called Last Rampage, that I played Gary Tyson, who was a convicted killer that escaped from prison in Arizona with the help of his three boys, teenage boys. That's on Netflix or Amazon or something. And then another movie I did... I just did a movie with Gary Oldman and Meryl Streep that Steve Soderbergh directed called The Laundromat. Most of my scenes are with David Schwimmer. David Schwimmer I did
from France,
Yeah, and then I just did a movie with Liam Neeson called The Honest Thief that I'm not sure when that's going to be out. Kate Walsh is in that, Liam, me. Yeah. And I did a movie with Morgan Freeman and John Travolta that's coming out called The Poison Rose. And then I did another thing. I got a bunch of movies since Scorpion.
I mean, listening to you, Robert, it's so amazing. You're doing so much stuff. You're 60 and you have your Harley Davidson dealership. You're doing movies. And how do you, keep up with everything?
When do I relax? I relax when I'm on my motorcycle, on my Harley Davidson, doing 90 miles an hour riding across the country. That's when I relax. I really, I zone out in the motorcycle riding. I love it. That's my most relaxed state, let's say. There's a focus that you hit when you're riding motorcycles like that across the country, and you get very introspective, and it's a deep focus, and I love it. So that's what I do. I'm making movies. I don't know if I'm going to do another television show. Right now, I'm very happy doing a lot of different varied roles. So I might just do movies for a while. And then I'm the co-owner of the Harley-Davidson dealership in Santa Clarita, California.
So it's a bike ride if you have a day off, if it's a Robert Patrick day, where you have nothing else scheduled. Would you just head out?
All the time. I use my Harley-Davidson as my number one means of transportation. Because, you know, the way I figured, you got two ways to go. You can either get in a car and you can ride somewhere, or you can get on a motorcycle and ride somewhere. And it's a hell of a lot more of an adventure to be on a motorcycle going somewhere. Even if you're just going to work, you know, I prefer riding the motorcycle. I think it's a much more exciting way to live life.
Not riding a motorcycle to Stadionmässan here in Malmö, because you're heading it this today. I'll let you go in a couple of minutes because you're heading off to
Because
sci-fi.
I'm boring the customers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The listeners. Excuse me.
Yeah. Of course. And you know, you'll be there for Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. I'm here with my friend Jesper for the Sci-Fi World convention at the, what's the venue?
Stadionmässan.
Stadionmässan.
Yeah.
And we're going to, it's a chance for me to say hello to everybody that's enjoyed my work over the years, and for me a chance to say thank you for enjoying it. And we get to acknowledge each other. It's cool. It's a delayed gratification. You know, when I make a movie, God knows where you're going to be when you see it. And if we'll ever meet together. And the cool thing that Jasper does is he brings the talent with the fans together, mm-hmm. so that we can meet and say hello. And it's fun for me to say hi to everybody. And so I'll be there all day tomorrow and all day Sunday.
Before I'll send you off to Stadionmässan, som alltså då alltså Malmömässan, Stadionmässan, lördag och söndag, I'm gonna give you a chance to put a song on Retro FM, a song that still means a lot to you, a song that you would play in your car, or when you, you know, memories connected
to
you.
There's such a cool opportunity now because, you know, I've played Elvis Presley in a movie, Lonely Street. And I played his daddy. And I played Johnny Cash's
daddy
and Walk the Line. And, you know, I have my own song that's out there now, too, by the way. I don't know if you have a copy of it. I could play my own song. But I don't think that's what you're looking for. So I would say let's play one of my all-time favorite artists, Bruce Springsteen. And the song is I'm on Fire. And I'll dedicate that to my beautiful wife, Barbara Patrick, sleeping somewhere back in the Hollywood Hills.
Thanks for stopping by, Robert Patrick.
God bless you. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Lördagsgästen på Retro FM.